Welcome to Watch Out, where we dig through our DVD dungeon, where we scour the endless streaming landscape, all to help you find some kick-ass horror movies.
Hello and welcome to Watch Out, the Horror Movie Review Podcast. We're glad to have you with us. Our goal is to provide you with spoiler-free reviews and recommendations for both recent films and horror classics. And to not be boring. I am Jason the Terrible, broadcasting from Ottawa, Ontario, and I am joined tonight, as always, from Vancouver, BC, by Grave Robber Jeff.
Hey, hey!
And Slice and Dice and Dave.
Hey, hey! See what I did there?
All right, so I know this episode is coming out quite a bit beyond Halloween. We didn't really do a great job of scheduling this year, but hey, it's our first year. It's our first Halloween as a podcast. We'll do better next year. So I wanted to open up the discussion a little bit. What do you remember of trick-or-treating when you were a kid?
Not much, pal.
what was your favorite or stupidest costume that you ever... Because we had some pretty good and pretty terrible Halloween costumes growing up.
Well, like, I mean, I think probably my swing for the old home run and complete miss was probably The Mask, the Jim Carrey film, The Mask. I tried to be him. I bought a, what do you call those things when you go swimming? A swim cap? Is that what it is? And I sprayed painted it green, and then I painted my face green. But I painted it way too dark of a green, so I didn't look anything. It was awful. Just absolutely awful. But I did try. That was probably my worst.
What about you, Grave Robber? What's your most memorable Halloween costume?
Well, there's a couple. I remember I was Dracula one year, but I was allergic to the face paint. And so the whole night I was going, and everybody thought I was just playing Dracula, but I was actually pretty sick. And I was kind of pale because it was like white face paint, right? So anyways, it was kind of funny. But then another year, I was Egon the Ghostbuster. And I think I won a ribbon at the grade 3 Halloween parade in the gymnasium.
You don't say.
I do say, although I can't remember for sure, because it was many moons ago.
I didn't win any goddamn ribbons for any of my costumes.
I've dressed up as Jason for Halloween before. But I think the most memorable and infamous Halloween costume I ever had was when I dressed up as a lamp. I think I was running out of ideas, and I don't think Mom was helping me out very much.
So, I do remember, and you looked just absolutely god-awful, Jason.
So I had this brown, formless bag around myself, and then I had a lampshade on my head, and it was supposed to be a lamp. But it looked kind of like a turd wearing a lampshade. And I remember walking around the school hallways and kids laughing at me, and I'm like, yeah, this was not a good choice, but whatever.
That's why you turned out the way you did, isn't it?
I don't remember going door to door with that thing, but...
Ah, good old candy, you know what I'm saying? You remember? And then you'd get to, like, the rich folks' houses, and they'd give you full chocolate bars. That's what it was all about. I just remember I was quite taken aback one time. I guess like what kids used to do, because they knew they'd give out the good loot, you see. So they'd go back several times, and then the rich guy would get pissed off and be like, hey, you've goddamn been here before. Scram, you freaks. So I was just like a young little guy trick-or-treating. And he thought I was there already. He's like, hey, you've already been here. Get the shit out of here. I was like, I haven't been here. Started crying. And then he told me to beat it. And so then I hucked a million eggs at his house and broke his window. And what? He sure learned his lesson at that point. I'm lying about the eggs and the rock. I didn't throw anything, but I... probably did feel a little embarrassed thinking he was calling me out for something I didn't even do. You got to be careful. You can't call out kids. They're young and fragile. You got to be, I mean, he was old and senile probably. But so, I mean, I guess it's a little give and take, but I think I did eventually get a chocolate bar. I think I might have cried to Ma and she would have taken care of it, right? Anyway.
That's people. A dramatic story.
Anything else fancy happened this weekend, fellas?
I heard that you witnessed an argument that somebody had about one of our episodes.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, we got to be careful here, fellas, because it's come to my attention that people are actually listening to our podcast, you see? So we have to give good advice for the most part. But I'm starting to learn that everybody's opinion is very different from one another's opinions on movies.
You don't say.
Yeah, but it's like bizarre. And I witnessed it firsthand. One of my coworkers there, he's like, hey, man. I was listening to your thing. I was like, I got to watch this Tammy and the T-Rex. So he watched it and he says, that was god-awful. Worst movie I've ever seen. And I said, oh, sorry about that, man. I thought it had its charm, I guess, you know, such a shitty-ass movie. And so then another gentleman walks by and he's like, hey, man, what are you guys talking about? Hey, we're talking about Tammy and the T-Rex. And he goes, I goddamn love Tammy and the T-Rex. And I was like, what? And then the other guy smacked his head and I said, well, what the hell, man? Is it a good movie or a terrible movie? There's three differing opinions right there. So anyway, I guess take it for what it is. You know what I'm saying? These reviews. And then we got into a big argument. Well, not really an argument about Mandy, but a big discussion about Mandy. That was interesting. We all agreed that we loved the Macaroni Goblin, at least. God, that was awesome.
I was looking at the top 200 horror movies of all times, courtesy of Rotten Tomatoes. And yep. I'm not going to get too much into it because I only looked at it briefly and I can't remember anything. But all I seem to remember is that Mandy was higher on that list than The Shining. So take that for what it's worth.
Well, I disagree with that. And it's funny, I was just the old friggin' beloved Walmart $5 bin I was taking a look at this week. I'll be damned if you didn't know what was in there. Mandy for $5. You think I even picked it up? Nope. I just threw a bunch of other ones over top of it and said, get to the bottom of the bin, you horrible. No, it wasn't that bad, but no way I'm going to spend $5 on it.
Well, that says enough right there.
Poor Mandy. Hey, let's get into this, fellas.
All right. Well, we have a mini review theme this week as chosen by Grave Robber Jeff. Grave Robber Jeff, why don't you tell us what our mini review theme this week is?
Yeah, I got to say, I sort of took the easy way out here because...
Yes, you did.
I was thinking...
Boy, did you ever.
I was thinking, oh, I got to come up with something good and something unique and creative. And then I was running out of time, so I just said, Shudder has some predefined categories. I'll just pick one of them, and that's what I did. So the category I picked was The Unraveling Mind, because the psychological stuff can get pretty crazy. So I said, why not? And then, plus, there's only 20 or so movies in there, so you only have so many choices. That was my theory.
Yeah, and we got to bring up the fact that two of those 20 or so movies we've already talked about on our show.
Yeah, that was something. And I actually saw another one, a third one on there. Me and you watched it, Jeff, that atrocious one, another found footage film that I thought was atrocious.
Yeah, it wasn't that great, that one.
But anyway, so I was like, if they're all like that, this is a horrible category.
So there was Caveat in there that you, Slice and Dice, and Dave talked about a few episodes ago. And
yeah, that was a good one.
And there was Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker, which was one of our practice episodes from way back when.
Oh, that was a good one, too.
Jason the Terrible's DVD Dungeon.
All right, so for my pick from the Unraveling Mind section on Shudder, I went straight to the David Cronenberg entry because I think I've missed out on watching a lot of David Cronenberg, so I thought this was a good chance to watch something from the acclaimed body horror expert. And I picked from 1988 Dead Ringers. The synopsis on Shudder says something to the effect of twin gynecologists fall into a love triangle with a patient. And then it goes on to say something about in this body horror classic. And I got to tell you right off the top, that is a huge misdirection, sleight of hand. This is, number one, this is not a body horror movie. Or at least it's not a body horror in the terms of what you might think David Cronenberg is going to give you, like The Fly or something like that. There are exactly 1.5 gory scenes in this movie. But what you do have is a whole lot of implied body horror. And I'll go one step further. This is actually going to be a lot more of an uncomfortable movie to watch if you're a woman. I can only imagine, because I'm not a woman. So I've never gone to a gynecologist. But the concept here is that these women are going to a gynecologist, putting themselves in a very vulnerable position, and that's what makes it a nerve-wracking experience. So to back up a little bit, this movie, like I said, is two twins. They're both played by Jeremy Irons, and this is really his movie. The amazing way he plays these two guys, not even to mention the fact the camera tricks and being able to show them both on the screen at the same time, that was done really well. It was kind of cutting edge for 1988, where they were able to show the two of them on there without showing the line in the split screen where you could film one and then the other and put them both together. They used some computer motion matte movement type technique where they could change the line where that where side A and side B was while the camera was moving. So it really made for some effective effects here. But really, this movie is all about Jeremy Irons' performance. He plays Elliot and his brother Beverly.
It's kind of a girlish name, if you don't mind me sneaking in there.
It is, and it kind of comes up a few times. But really, you've got one very dominant twin, and that's Elliot. Beverly is the less dominant, is the very withdrawn, in the background guy. It's this weird relationship where, you know, they're very successful in their gynecological practice. They're winning awards, they're creating cutting edge, industry leading products in the field of gynecology. Elliot's the guy that always goes to the awards ceremonies to accept the awards. Beverly's always the one doing the research back in the office. Beverly's the one typically seeing the patients. Elliot's the one typically going out with the patients and having sex with them. But what's very weird and what starts to get that ick factor here is that they often, you know, Elliot will seduce them, and when he gets tired, he'll let Beverly come in and continue the relationship, unbeknownst to the woman in question. I'm sure this concept has been done in countless comedies before, where you've got two twins and they're both dating the same girl and the girl can't tell the difference. This time it's done in kind of a psychological horror movie way. Now, things start to happen when Claire comes into the office, and she's a famous actress, and she's trying to figure out why she can't get pregnant. Claire starts up a relationship with Beverly. Unbeknownst to her, she's also, you know, the very first part of the relationship was actually with Elliot. But Beverly's falling quite hard for her. They're getting into some kinky stuff, and, you know, the movie doesn't really show anything too crazy, but there is a lot of stuff with, like, surgical tubing and things like that involved. But Beverly also starts to get hooked on all the prescription drugs that Claire, as an actress, has used forever as well, right? So he starts to go on this whole downward spiral, you know, the whole unraveling mind thing. And the movie is really about how Beverly's downward spiral impacts his relationship with his brother and how the two of them are really linked because of the fact that they're twins. It's very much a psychological movie. Like I said, it's going to impact women, I think, a lot more because it's that level of trust that you need with your gynecologist, I would imagine. Like, that trust is being violated in several ways in this movie. As the movie goes along and the downward spiral continues, they start creating these tools that are more out of a torture chamber, like a medieval torture chamber, or some twisted instruments that it's implied that they want to try to use during their practice. And so that's very icky and very disturbing. But again, you don't ever see anything like that happen. It is a very good movie if you set your expectations for what you want to see. If you want to see, like, The Fly, but in a gynecological movie instead, I mean, that's just weird to think about, but you're not going to see that. There is, like I said, there's exactly 1.5 scenes where you get some weird visual body horror going on. Everything else is psychological. The acting performances are great. I mean, Jeremy Irons, the way he does these two twins is freaking amazing. And he's the kind of actor that I thought I knew of him a lot more than I evidently did. Going down his IMDb, he was in Die Hard with a Vengeance. I'm sure that's where I recognize him a lot. He's also Alfred in the Batman v Superman and in the Justice League movies, so I know him from there as well. And he's the voice of Scar in The Lion King. So he has been around. I also remember him from the Simpsons episode where Lisa Simpson meets the smarter girl in her class and has to do the word puzzle with Jeremy Irons' name in it, if you remember that. Grave Robber Jeff.
I was going to bring it up, the anagram game.
The anagram game, yep. Jeremy's iron, anyway.
Gross.
I have a ball. Perhaps you'd like to bounce it. God, I love Simpsons.
Yep. Few more cast notes here. This was filmed in Toronto. It's set in Toronto, actually. Written and directed by David Cronenberg. He had a couple other people on the writing as well. Pretty much everybody else are Canadian actors. Geneviève Bujold plays Claire. She was born in Montreal. There's small parts for Shirley Douglas and Heidi von Paleski. And Jill and Jacqueline Hennessy make their film debuts as twin escorts. Jill went on to star in Crossing Jordan and Law and Order. And Jacqueline Hennessy went on to do Not So Much. So that's an interesting experimental thing. Like, how do you have twin actresses and one of them becomes successful and the other one doesn't? Now, this was ranked the 20th scariest movie of all time by Entertainment Weekly.
What? You don't say.
Yeah, I don't agree with that either.
What year was this, sorry? Did I miss that? I'm sure I did.
1988.
88? Get out of town.
Rotten Tomatoes has this at an 83/82, so that's 83% positive critics and 82% positive.
Hey, that sounds
that's
like
quite
it's a,
positive.
Yeah, that's pretty highly rated.
It is, and I think that this suffers from what I expected to come out of a David Cronenberg movie. I just wasn't expecting what I got.
Think of it this way, Jason. Maybe you were expecting something different because this was in the unraveling mind category. You see what I'm trying to drop down here?
I know, but what my point is that if you look at the Shudder synopsis, the last part of that synopsis is in the body horror classic. Like, I would not, okay, I would not call this.
I guess that would steer you in the wrong direction. My apologies.
Yeah, well, it's obviously psychological body horror. Like, it's what could be happening inside. Like, as Beverly's mental deterioration continues, he starts to believe that some women are mutated inside. And so, like I said, that's body horror, but it's imagined both by the character and by the audience because we don't see anything like that. And actually, one little last bit of trivia was that this was originally going to be called Twins.
Just like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito's movie.
Until Ivan Reitman came to David Cronenberg and said, "Hey, dude, I'd like to buy that title Twins off you because I've got quite the movie I'd like to put it on." And David Cronenberg said, "Okay."
That's hilarious because they had to friggin' get the Ghostbusters title too. If you watch that movies that made us show. You know what I'm saying?
So Ivan Reitman just went around paying for movie titles.
I guess so. But it has to be the right title, so maybe he knows what he's talking about.
I think Ivan Reitman did okay. So.
Yeah, what was it going to be? Ghost, what the shit was it going to be? Breakers or something. Something stupid like that. So Ghostbusters was obviously necessary. Anyway, I digress.
It really is a well-done movie. Coming in at 2 hours, though, it is a bit long.
Oh, you didn't say that, did you? You didn't say it was a two-hour-long movie.
I just did. Ooh. So it's 2 hours of psychological with the promise, but never delivering on anything really shocking. It's still well worth watching because it is pretty different. It's just if you're not used to this kind of movie, you're going to be expecting more. So I did rate it a 7 out of 10. Maybe there's a little Canadian bias in there as well because, it's David Cronenberg and it's filmed in Toronto and set in Toronto and lots of Canadian actors. So we like that around here.
Well, thank you, Jason the Terrible, for your mini review of Dead Ringers.
All right. So who wants to go next? Every episode lately I've been saying, well, Dave, you've been complaining that you've been going third. So it can't be that many times that you've been going third.
Well, I'll go next because... Jeff picked the thing, so I guess he can go third, you know. Why the hell not, eh? Does that make sense? Probably not.
Sure. Well, let's see what's in your scream sack this week.
Slice and dice and Dave's screaming scream sack of
night. I'm going to open up the scream sack here, and I'm going to reach deeply
this.
This is awful. Why did I have to go after the one about gynecology? Okay. Okay, and how can I say this? Okay, I just kind of peeled back the... Oh, I watched a movie from my scream sack here, fellas. It kind of rose to the top without me having to reach in very deep here. Although there was only 20 movies to choose from there, Jeffrey the Grave Robber, I didn't know which one to goddamn pick for the life of me. So I actually had to start watching some trailers. And the trailer that grabbed me by the old cojones, as they say, was 2014's The Canal. You guys ever hear of The Canal?
That sounds uncomfortably close to gynecological terms, actually.
Yeah, horrible, horrible. This goddamn week. Directed by Ivan Kavanaugh and written by Ivan Kavanaugh. I'm going to have to read you the old synopsis here, which I will take from Rotten Tomatoes. David and his family move into a period house by a canal. Hey, that's the name of the movie, The Canal.
Is that the whole synopsis?
That's it. No, David and his family move into a period house by a canal and dismiss rumors of the place being haunted. David starts having nightmarish visions when he suspects his wife is cheating, and he begins to descend into madness. Picked right from The Unraveling Mind here on Shudder, 2014's The Canal, starring Rupert Evans, Antonia Campbell Hughes, Hannah Hoekstra, Steve Oram, and Kelly Byrne. So I watched the old preview here, and I said, hey, this movie looks like it's going to scare me. So I picked it. I really wanted something. I was in the mood for something scary and possibly terrifying. And I'll be damned if on the poster here it says, a masterful psychological thriller. I said, ooh, I like masterful psychological thrillers. And I'll be damned if it didn't win an award at the Blood Guts UK Horror Awards in 2014 for the scariest film. So I said, well, if I'm looking for a scary film, this has got to be it. So it starts off with them, these guys moving into a new house, him and his wife, and popping out a baby 5 years later, and then they're just living their lives. I don't know what his wife does, to be fair. He goes with his wife to this place for her work, and then this guy's like, hey, you got to meet this client and this and that. And then he's watching her. And he's like, hey, what's my wife doing? And it's a little like, hey, I tell you, if my wife was doing this with some client, I would have been like, oh, I don't like the looks of this. She's like, oh, I love you, blah, blah, blah. She ends up going on like, she has to go out for work and has to meet with this client. Well, what does he do? He goes, hey, I'm going to follow this gal. He runs into them, you know, kind of getting it on, as they say. So that's a little disappointing. From this David character's aspect. The rest of the evening is a hellish nightmare psychological trip that we don't know what's real and what's not real. And then obviously his wife goes missing, you see, and then the cops are all on him. Hey, what the shit? It's always the husband, man. It's always the husband when the wife goes missing. Oh yeah, shit, I guess I should say that at his work, which I guess he works at, like, I don't even know where the hell he worked, man. Anyway, he's at this place, and his co-worker's like, here, hey, David, you got to look at these films that came in and maybe archive them. He's like an archivalist. Is that an archivist?
Archivist.
Maybe he's one of those. So anyway, he sits down, and he's like, I got to watch this goddamn film that came in. And I'll be damned if on that film it wasn't about a murder that happened back in the early 1900s. And holy shite, if it didn't happen in the house he just moved into, you see? So it obviously, this movie takes some aspects of a movie that I'm quite fond of, actually. I don't know, well, mind you, I don't know if it's specifically taking it from this particular movie, but in 2012, there was a movie called Sinister, where he finds a bunch of reels and stuff. So anyway, I found it was kind of close to that, right? He's going around and he's like, oh, is this house haunted, you know, and what's he seeing, what's real and what's not? So then he brings the video camera thing to start recording stuff in the house, seeing shadowy things and stuff and on cameras and stuff. And so that kind of reminded me a little bit of that movie that I just watched, The Ghost Dimension, when they're walking around filming stuff. So not only was there sinister type stuff, there was Ghost Dimension type stuff. And then I'll be damned if there was, like, there was kind of some Ring type stuff going on too. Remember that movie, The Ring? Mash all those together and you got a lot of aspects of those movies into this one. Now, this one is, it's kind of slow, but I didn't really consider it slow. I was kind of interested in it because obviously when someone goes missing or whatnot, you're very interested to find out why that particular person went missing or whatnot. So I was pretty interested in the story. Yeah. It wasn't like a fancy story by any means, but like you say, it's the unraveling mind. So you're like, well, what's he seeing? Is he going, you know, is he going insane? Is he seeing these things? Is the house really haunted? Is the stuff that he's filming on video, is that real? Is it, throw into all of this, he's got a 5-year-old kid, you see. The whole movie, I'm sitting there basically just going, Jesus Christ, man. Like, so he's going through all this, but then you're worried for the goddamn 5-year-old kid the whole time too. And he's got a nanny. And I thought the nanny was awesome. The nanny was Sophie, and she was played by Kelly Byrne. I thought she did a really good job because she's like, this guy's going nuts, man. Do it like, but I feel like I feel bad for this 5-year-old kid. Do I stick around here or do I just get the hell out of here? What do I do? Anyway, so that was a good like little plot point, I thought. And his name was David. And my name's David. So there's some scenes where they're going, David, blah, no, David, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there going, ah, because it was late at night and it was dark and I had my headphones on. And then I was like, am I going insane? Are they actually speaking to me and not this character? No, I'm just kidding. So I watched it late at night with my headset on the old TV in the dark. And that helped. There is a lot of good scary stuff. A lot of it happens closer to the end. It takes a little bit to get there, but I found it was interesting enough to keep my attention. And I would suggest, if you like a movie with those ones that I kind of talked about mushed into one, this might be the one for you. Now I didn't rate it too high. I rated it the old fat 6 out of 10 because I find like if it's not terrible and if it's not great, and I liked it, I can't see rating it higher or lower than a 6. So
you almost don't even need the numbers 1 through 3.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, that's true. I mean, it is important though, because if it was awful, I'd say, no, don't even bother. And if it was like really great, I'd be like gushing my guts out for it. But,
gushing,
like, hey, we're a horror podcast. I thought that was a pretty good, metaphor. Was that what I
mean? Great alliteration.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Slice and Dice and Dave.
Thanks guys. The canal.
So, Grave Robber Jeff, your pick for The Unraveling Mind, did you find the hidden gem in Shudder's collection?
Grave Robber Jeff's Fresh Dig.
I wouldn't call it a gem necessarily, although it was critically acclaimed. Mm-hmm. So while I was searching through the 20, I noticed one was an animated show, and I was like, wow, that's interesting. I don't know if I've ever seen a completely animated horror movie before. And the title of this one is 2018's La Casa Lobo, or in English, The Wolf House.
All right, this will be interesting.
And it tells the story of Maria, a young woman who takes refuge in a house in southern Chile after escaping from a German colony. I knew nothing about this movie when I hit play. I just knew it was animated. And one thing I wish I would have done was look into the background a bit, but we'll get into that in a minute or two. So as already suggested, this is an animated show. But get this, it's not just your regular 2D animation.
What?
It is a stop-motion animation movie.
Oh my god.
So the only...
Like claymation.
I was trying to think, have I ever seen a movie like that? The only thing I could remember that did stop-motion was Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer Christmas Special and the California Raisins Christmas Special.
Oh, I love
special.
That one, yeah.
Puppet Master is done stop motion.
Well, I haven't seen the Puppet Master.
You're talking about an entire movie based on stop motion, so.
Yeah, but it's not all stop motion. It's a combination of 2D and stop motion. And the weird thing is, because it's stop motion, is there's a bunch of, like, actual backdrops that are real objects. So it's all mixed together. It's very bizarre. Like there's a TV playing and it's an actual TV program. At the same time that there's all these paper mache looking dolls or puppets or whatever you want to call them. But I have to say, like, after the first 15 minutes, I almost quit watching because I just it was like, I don't get what's going on at all. How am I going to talk about this if I don't understand what the hell is going on? But then I sort of thought, well, it seems like it's all about the visuals and the animation, obviously. So I was like, ah, well, at least I can talk about that because it's pretty neat, actually. Because story-wise, there's like the first 3 minutes or so is this live-action recording of a colony in the mountains, which I found out later was the colony that this lady escaped from. Yeah, and then they introduced the movie as like part of their culture or something. It was just a bizarre start. This girl was banished because, well, she wasn't banished. She was assigned to like solitary confinement for letting a couple pigs out of the pen. But she manages to escape and finds refuge in the house, like the synopsis suggested. And so a lot of it at the beginning was setting up as kind of like a take on the Three Little Pigs, like Fairy Tale or Little Red Riding Hood and that sort of thing, where they set up running from a wolf and the wolf is trying to get you. And there's actually pigs in this house that she finds. And the animation is very impressive. And I think if you like art and like Pablo Picasso's and those sorts of guys, that they'd probably appreciate this because it's quite insane what they're doing animation wise. And I was like, wow, this is dedication, because there's so much detail with these little guys like moving around and blending into the furniture and coming out of the furniture and paintings appearing on the wall and then disappearing and characters kind of morphing into other things. It's quite visually different, for sure. And a lot of the feedback I've read is that people who have been on cannabis have really enjoyed this movie. and I could see, yeah, I could see that. Not that I'm the biggest cannabis user, but there's just so bizarre stuff. And the detail takes a lot of time to form on the screen, which is why I think I got a bit bored at times, because while there's a narrative in the background, the scene's kind of building. And then these pigs, all of a sudden, they become kids in a very bizarre way. And so none of it was making any sense to me whatsoever. So I said, all right, well, I'll just watch it for the visuals then. It was just really neat. So I sort of abandoned the story a bit because I didn't know what the hell was going on. And just enjoyed the animation, which was very interesting. And I gotta say, there's one scene where the kids start singing, which was just so bizarre that I didn't even know what to think. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life, and I've seen two weird things. So I have to like always make that same Simpsons joke. I always steal it from there.
All the kids start singing, you're making me think of the Charlie Brown Christmas special or something.
it was a little bit like that. But the sound was just so bizarre. The other things besides the visuals, the sounds were super creepy.
Like a horror movie?
Yeah, like the sound is definitely like suggesting sinister, creepy, scary type stuff.
But is it in the Unraveling Mind section because you have to have an unraveling mind to understand it?
You have to be nuts.
I don't know. Yeah, because once I read into the background a bit, which maybe I'll talk about now. All right, so after it was over and I was like, what the hell? I looked into the history of it, and apparently there was a Chilean colony founded in 1961 called Colonia Dignidad, which translates to Dignity Colony, which was founded by a former Nazi called Paul Schaefer, and not to be confused with our Canadian buddy Paul Schaefer from the David Letterman show, but this guy was a pretty nasty Nazi. A nasty Nazi? He was a bad guy. And he did bad things to the Chileans in this colony. And so apparently a lot of this movie had symbolism and references to that point in time, which, thinking back, I thought made a lot more sense. So I think if you want to watch this one, you should read a bit about the background. It'll make a lot more sense, I think.
So I was expecting you to say, once you abandoned trying to understand the story and just watch the images, that at some point everything started to make sense, but it sounds like it only made sense once the movie was over and you looked into it.
In my case, yes. That's the case. But there was a lot of creepy stuff going on the screen, but it just didn't make any sense to me. But afterwards, people were saying, like, oh, yeah, all of this symbolized this and suggested that. And I'm like, oh, okay. But, yeah, I'd have to watch it again. I don't think I could watch it again. So I'll just take their word for it. But I think if you have that background going into it, you'll probably enjoy it more than I did, even though the imagery is very impressive. And the dedication to do it has just got to be insane. And I looked into it. It took 5 years to make this thing.
Wow.
And it is only 1 hour and 15 minutes long. So that gives you an idea of the intricacy of the animation. So I guess, yeah, because if you're into art and like that sort of stuff, it's really neat. But you'll probably have a hard, well, I don't know if everybody, but I had a hard time following it. And it seems a lot of times like it's a dreamscape too. So you don't really like, I sort of thought about it too. Maybe it's the Maria's character is like going insane because she's off by herself hiding from this Paul Schaefer guy. And so he's constantly like saying, Maria, Maria, and like trying to find her. It's really creepy.
What was it worth you spending your 1 hour and 15 minutes watching there, Jeffrey the Grave Robber?
Well, yeah, because if you recall, I just about stopped. I think it's something you just have to see because of the extreme detail of all the animation.
Was it a scary movie? Were you scared?
I don't even think I was scared, but like just creeped out with some of the combinations of the sounds and the images. Because I guess you could be affected a bit by that, even though the story is not obvious. But it seemed like kind of like a nightmare where nothing makes sense. Like maybe that's what they were going for. I don't know. That's kind of it in a nutshell, I guess. Cool. So at the end of the day, unfortunately, it's a big fat six because I didn't love it and I didn't hate it. But I think people should watch it just because it's so unique.
So were you saying that the Wikipedia was particularly helpful in understanding about this movie?
I eventually went through a bunch of reviews and stuff and people explained it.
That's well, thank you, Grave Robber Jeff, man.
La Casa Lobo.
Of course you picked La Casa Lobo. Thank you very much. Well, hey, I think it's about that time for the feature presentation.
And now watch out for our feature presentation.
All right, for this episode's feature review, I wanted to pick a movie that I heard some... I think what I actually heard was Stephen King tweeting about it not so long ago, saying that it actually terrified him, or something to that effect. Let's start with the title. It's called The Witch, but it's spelled with 2 V's.
Yeah, what the hell is that all about, eh?
The explanation behind this is that this is definitely a period movie. It's set back in 1630. And evidently back in the 1630s, they did not have the letter W yet. It was not in common usage.
So well,
this, is, this is how they wrote the W. Was with 2 V's.
That's why. I don't understand why the hell we don't call a W a double V, for Christ's sakes.
The Does French get else it, right?
Oh, double V. You're right.
Yeah.
God. Anyway, well, there you go. There's one up for the French.
And if you write in cursive, then it's a W.
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever. Okay, fine.
Hey, you brought it up. So
2 V's, a W, the witch, the vitch. Well, how about you explain the old synopsis there, Jason the Terrible?
A young girl and her Puritan family are exiled from a small village, and they have to make their farm out in the wilderness beside some woods, which may or may not have an evil living in them. Slowly, that evil starts to infiltrate their family. All right, well, this movie was made in 2015. It premiered at the 2015 Sundance Film Festival on January 27th, and it premiered in the Toronto International Film Festival in Canada. This was the first feature movie for director and writer Robert Eggers, who has since gone on to do The Lighthouse, which is another movie I've heard of. I read an article on that one in Fangoria, actually. But This did quite well commercially. It was filmed for a $4 million budget, and it made $40 million worldwide. And highly acclaimed and highly praised. It was filmed in Ontario. Actually, Eggers wanted to film the picture on location in New England. It takes place in puritanical 1630 New England. But they had to settle for, and they, I say that again, they had to settle for Canada because of the tax breaks. they ended up finding a small, very small, tiny little outpost called Kiosk, Ontario, which is kind of northeastern, a little bit west of where I live, actually. This whole movie is based on and inspired by folk tales and fairy tales and written accounts of historical witchcraft in the New England era. And this is all coming from Robert Eggers, who wrote this screenplay with all of that in mind. And so a lot of the dialogue comes directly from these sources. And I got to tell you, I was watching this movie. I have this new set of awesome headphones. You know, really a lot better than the little earbuds I used to be watching these movies with. So I get the whole impact of the score and everything. Mm-hmm. And so I said, I don't need subtitles. So I turn off the subtitles. And about 10 minutes into it, I'm like, I need subtitles. Because they're essentially speaking a very different form of English. And I couldn't follow it.
Yeah. I was lucky because it was like I say... Haley, my wife there, watches everything and with subtitles. So when I turned it on, it just had them on and I was just too lazy to turn them off. And I was like, oh, thank God I didn't turn them off.
Yeah, so, that's a tip. It's very hard to follow without the subtitles.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is because I watched this goddamn thing twice. I had to read some of the lines a couple of times to understand how like what they were saying, right? But I guess that's how they talked back then.
The dialect.
The dialect annoyed me.
List to me, Dave. List to me.
Yeah, like, I mean, some of it I don't mind.
It's got to be genuine to the time period. And
well, no, of course. And that's what I was saying, that they explained that that's, you know, a lot of the language and stuff came from that.
When I was researching this movie, I came across a lot of opinions that called this elevated horror.
What the hell does that mean?
Well, it rubs me the wrong way a little bit because... Gross. Yes, this is a horror movie that does not rely on blood and guts and jump scares and things like that. It's very much a story-driven character piece with carefully crafted tension and great acting performances, and essentially it's a very well-made movie.
And so that rubs you the wrong way, that it was a well-made movie?
No. Well, you're not letting me finish my sentence.
Oh, well, I'm getting confused here because you're saying all this and I'm going, well, what the hell's rubbing you the wrong way, pal? Please get to it.
The thing that's rubbing me the wrong way is that they have to distinguish a horror movie that's made well from all the other horror movies.
Oh, I see what you're... Yeah, that does rub me the wrong way.
So it's elevated horror as if to say that a normal horror movie could not have those concepts. It cannot be made well. Right? Because this one is made well, it is elevated above all those other horror movies. So
yeah. You know what? I'm pissed off now too, Jay. I'm in your bandwagon here. You jerks. There can be other good horror movies that aren't elevated. Unbelievable. Like Tammy and the... No, I'm just pretending. But no. Like, well, this is the funny thing is because, I mean, like, I'm not going to get like hands and feet into anything, but I'm just going to say... I watched it and I was kind of like, okay, I liked it. But like then I went and looked at like all the reviews and stuff and I'm like, really? You guys loved it that much, I thought? And then luckily I took a look at Rotten Tomatoes and it brought it back down to reality for me.
They're calling it elevated horror and somehow implying that only people who are intelligent enough to see its value will enjoy it. And so if you don't enjoy it as much as they do, it's because you're stupid.
For me, like the non-horror elements were the good part, and the actual horror elements weren't that great. What stood out to me for sure was that it had a very Game of Thrones-y style to it. The acting was above average, and the atmosphere and the feel of it was very well done.
All right, well, let's talk about Anya Taylor-Joy for a second here, who plays Thomason.
The main gal in The Witch? Yeah, she's coming out with a movie called Last Night in Soho that looks pretty good.
Well, she was a lot of movies that I know of, and also, so she was most recently, I think she stars as Beth Harmon in The Queen's Gambit, which is a Netflix show that has done quite well. She was also Ileana Rasputin in New Mutants. She also plays Casey Cook in the M. Night Shyamalan movies Split and Glass.
Oh, get out of town. I haven't seen those yet.
Oh, you really have to.
No, is Glass, like, so does it go Unbreakable, Glass, Split?
No.
Does it go Unbreakable, Split, Glass?
Yes, it does.
Ah, interesting. Well, I've seen Unbreakable. As a matter of fact, I think I saw that in the movie theater back in the day. Anya Taylor-Joy.
All right.
Lovely actress. Lovely actress.
Yeah, I thought she did quite well. She reminded me, her smile reminded me a lot of Michelle Williams. Remember her?
Yeah! I didn't think about that until you just told me, but yes.
We have Harvey Scrimshaw as Caleb. Now, he doesn't have too much of a resume yet.
He should after this, right? You see that one scene that he...
Yeah, that was probably what I would call the most chilling part for me of the whole thing. All right, Grave Robber Jeff, when you brought up the Game of Thrones, did you bring that up because there are people from Game of Thrones on the cast?
No, as I was watching, I'm like, God, that guy would be good on Game of Thrones.
That guy was on Game of Thrones.
Ralph Ineson.
Yes.
I thought, well, maybe he could have been on there, but I didn't recognize him because I hadn't seen the show.
Oh, was he the guy? Was he the what's it called guy that I loved?
He was Dagmar Clefjaw. Don't you remember Dagmar Clefjaw?
No.
No, I don't. No.
He was like the left-hand man of Theon Greyjoy.
Oh, get out of here. And he was also in the IT crowd my wife brought up, and I guess he smooches some guy's rear end, so that's pretty hilarious. But no, Ralph.
And he's Amicus Caro in Harry Potter, and he's Chris Finch in the UK version of The Office, and he had bit parts in Guardians of the Galaxy and Star Wars Episode 7.
Okay. Well, the thing about him was he was probably my favorite part of this movie.
So he plays the
voice, man.
He plays the father.
What a manly goddamn voice that guy has.
But the person I did recognize from Game of Thrones was Kate Dickey, who played Catherine, his wife.
Oh, that's right. The one that breastfed her, like, 8-year-old son, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, she's
She was good. She was a good casting there, I thought.
She's a very stern-looking woman. Very puritanical.
The first time around, I was not a big fan of the mother at all, right? But then the second time around, I'm like, I felt goddamn bad for that goddamn mother. You know what I'm saying? And I saw where she was coming from.
She does a really good job of playing a wife that seems to be holding on by a thread the whole time and is not a pleasant person and is quick to blame people.
Well, hold on. She wasn't. This is where I'm going to stand up for the woman. Look at everything she's gone through. Plus, they've just moved over from England. They're super homesick. They've been exiled from the place that they were, and now they're off on their like imagine that.
But from the very beginning, Catherine blames Thomason for a lot. What you're ending up with is a very strained relationship between mother and daughter, and the protagonist of this movie is Thomason. So we're, by proxy, being in a strained relationship with Catherine's character. As you're watching it for the first time, and you're watching these things unfold, and you don't know where it's going, the mother character is not as sympathetic. Knowing what you knew the second time, she can be seen more sympathetic. I will give you that for sure. What gets us going off right away is Thomason takes her baby brother out to the fields to play and is playing peekaboo with him, and it's just the cutest kid. And so right away you're feeling apprehensive for him because this is a horror movie and he's too cute. I guess our fears are realized. You know, this is not a spoiler because this happens in the first 5 minutes.
The baby goes missing in the woods.
This is what kicks off the story. This is the first hint that there's something evil or supernatural happening. All right, guys, well, let me ask you this question. Did this movie scare the crap out of you?
Well, I would have to say that it was definitely more creepy than scary, I think. It's one of the things I thought was that the lighting and the ambiance and the environment was all kind of like constantly dark and dreary, and there was just this sense of foreboding that something was going to be wrong or things were just always terrible, it seems. Well, actually, now thinking about it, I guess maybe there were a few points where it's kind of spooky.
Yeah, no, I see where you're coming at, Jeff, and I actually agree with you there, because the second time around, I was like, yeah, this movie isn't scary. It's very kind of depressing and, like, upsetting from just a general life standpoint, if that makes sense. There's not much scariness happening throughout it. There's just a decay of happiness. Not that it was happy to start with, but it decayed even more as the movie went on. You know what I'm saying?
A decay of happiness.
That's
inspiring.
That was That was the punk rock band I was in high school, The Decay of Happiness.
Really? That's what you called yourself?
That was a joke.
That was egg yolk and the hash browns.
No, that was my rapping days when I was in like elementary school. That might have actually been primary school. Egg yolk and the hash browns, my effers. I had some good ones like smooth. It was smooth. Anyway, enough about egg yolk and the hash browns, which was the greatest 5-year-old white rapping dude from the interior of British Columbia. No, like I say, just decaying of happiness.
No, you hit the nail right on the head with that, though. That's a brilliant way to describe it.
Yeah, because it's not very scary. There's a couple scary parts. I think, like, there was one kind of jump scare that wasn't, like, there wasn't really any jump scares in here, was there?
No, the movie's constructed more as a gradual building of tension. And I mean, they throw in some scary-looking stuff right at the beginning to tell you that at least you're watching what could be a very scary movie.
Yeah, it says, hey, look, at this is what this movie's going to be all about. And then you're like, wait a second, that's not what this movie was all about at all.
I don't know about you guys, but on the whole, like, religion boat again. It was like 85% based on religious stuff, wouldn't you say?
It's hard to get away from that with a witch movie. I think the whole point of witches back then was very tied to religion. But that's a good point, Grave Robber Jeff. You're not a big fan of these religious overtones in horror movies, are you?
Not really. It's just kind of like it's the same setup over and over again. Like the devil and witches and crosses and all that. Oh, I don't think there are any crucifixes in this one, but you get the idea. But it just got me thinking, like, too, in that period of time, like, people weren't allowed to do anything without it being a sin, right? Because there's the 7 deadly sins. Do you guys remember what the 7 deadly sins are?
Is this the trivia section?
Blasphemy. Isn't blasphemy one of them? I don't know.
No.
Or what? It's not?
I don't think so.
What the shit are the 7 deadly sins?
You got, okay, Grave Robber Jeff, let's hear the list. Or do you want me to try to name as many as I can? Because I can probably get, I bet you I can get 5.
Gluttony.
I bet you I can get 4.
Gluttony's one because of that movie, 7. Hold on.
That's where they all...
Was 7 about the 7 deadly sins?
Oh, for goodness sake, yes.
I'm just pretending, but yes.
Oh, I thought you were totally serious, and I was going to have to edit this part out because we couldn't have a horror host that didn't understand that.
Oh, God. What a movie that 7 was, eh? I got to rewatch movie. That one. It's,
Gwyneth Paltrow.
She was in 7?
Yeah.
All I remember
that was her
Brad
first
Pitt,
movie, I think.
Morgan Freeman.
All right, so Lust. Greed.
Yep. Give me that goddamn money, you jerk.
So lust, greed, and gluttony?
I'm hungry. Give me some food, you freak.
Envy.
Yeah.
I'm green with envy.
You're doing a great job playing along.
Something about loving thy neighbor.
And one is a very central theme of this movie we just watched, which is why I brought it up.
Something about listen to thy mother and thy father or something. Oh, no, don't spread lies about, things.
There's actually one that I don't know.
Oh, thou shalt not steal. Oh, I'm thinking commandments. I was right about that, though, if we were talking about the 10 commandments.
Give us some hints, Grave Robber Jeff.
Okay, well, the dad in the movie.
Pride.
It was... Yeah, there you go.
Oh, shit. Okay, I get the next one then. One more hint.
Is that the one you're trying to hint?
Yes.
All right, there you go.
That was the most important one.
Okay.
I'll get this one now.
The other two are very difficult, so good luck.
Oh, son of a bitch. Why did I get
I think
the
I
difficult
just say
one?
Them.
No, give us a hint. It makes it
give
fun.
Give me one thingy.
Okay. There is a book about grapes.
Wrath.
You son of a... It was my turn.
Here's the grapes, and here's the wrath. That was another Simpsons quote.
Yeah.
No, hold on here. What's the next one there, Jeff?
Last one
would be very tough, but I'll say it's an animal.
Lioness.
A very slow
snake.
Animal.
Sloth.
Sloth.
It is a sloth. Ha! I mean, it is sloth.
Take that, Jason the Terrible. Guess who got the hardest one of the bunch? That's right. Me. Slicing Dicing Dave.
I'll give you that one.
Woohoo! Hey, what were we talking about? Oh, the witch!
So, yeah, great. So I brought that up because a lot of those themes are kind of present in this movie.
Hey, that's a really good point there, Grave Robber Jeff.
I guess what it sounds like, though, is that when the family starts breaking down and they start accusing each other, they're accusing themselves of violating these sins, right? So someone gets accused of lust towards someone else and wrath. I mean, as soon as people start getting wrathful, things go wrong for them.
One of the things I guess I'll bring up is I watched one of those The Witch Explained videos on YouTube, and it was the first time I did because I felt like I missed something. Yeah, and so it turns out I missed a lot of stuff. Pretty much every second I was like, how did I miss that? How did I miss that? Huh. So I appreciated it a lot more after understanding it. So we were talking about people who might enjoy this. Anyone who's really familiar with the history of that period and witchcraft and all that sort of stuff is probably going to notice a lot more detail than I did, for sure.
Well, yeah, because Grave Robber Jeff, you and I were talking earlier about the period of time this is set in and what happened not so many years after this time period.
Ooh, what
Salem
happened?
Witch Please trials. Explain.
Oh, you don't say. See, what a weird, interesting time to be alive, eh?
You know, that's what made me uneasy, was as soon as everybody in the family starts turning on each other and accusing themselves of being witches, the ramifications of that, what I know of the Salem witch trials and witch trials in general, is that it did not turn out well for those that were accused of this. That's a particularly bad place to be, especially within the family. But as you were saying, the decaying of happiness, it really does get to that point in this movie for them. Well, getting back to elevated horror and what you're saying, mm-hmm. Grave Robber, that there's all these layers to it, that if you understand witchcraft and you understand religion, that it's a more fulfilling watch. Maybe that's what elevated means in this case. I mean, because it's important that movies don't talk down to you and explain absolutely every single thing, but is there enough here for the average non-religious, non-witch expert fan to enjoy this movie?
I think so. I think you ought to use your brain a little bit more in this one, though. You know, there's certain horror movies that you can just sit there and friggin' not worry about anything and just be entertained. This one, you got to kind of go, you know what I'm saying?
Mark Corbin wrote the score, and
the score was awesome.
Essentially, I believe they aimed it to be very tense and almost, you know, discordant. It was all with non-electrical type instruments, so stringed instruments and wind instruments and things like that. So bringing in some women's voices and things like that too.
Oh,
so.
God, yes. I think it was pretty good. I like the chanting and stuff.
They do a really good job of setting up this environment of unease and tension and dread that you were talking about, Grave Robber, and it's the score, it's the lighting, it's the color palette. It's very washed out and dreary. The lighting is natural when possible. They do a lot of candlelight, especially for their dinner times in the dark, right? So it really puts you on edge because it's different and it's...
Yeah, it's just uncomfortable because everything's going wrong and there's nothing they can do about it, really.
I mean, I would not want to live on a homestead like that.
Well, you know what? If you look into the old Wikipedia here there, Jason the Terrible, one of the themes, it says, the symbolic conflict between civilization and nature is also present in all aspects of the film. The family lives next to a dark forest, a place tied to witchcraft in their culture, which underlines the conflict between their civilized patriarchal religion and the gothic wild nature world that surrounds them.
I mean, how many times do people have to set up their house beside a haunted forest before they realize they shouldn't be setting up their house beside a haunted forest?
You know, it was a good point that they, or a good story plot line that they threw in there, that their crops and stuff were all bad and stuff. You know what I mean?
That's what I wanted to say, actually.
That kind of adds a little bit more to the craziness of it all, right?
This is actually a movie that doesn't have any humor in it, really, except if you think of the bratty kids, which just drove me insane.
Yeah, no, they weren't funny.
But at one point, so I was watching the dad cutting his logs. I'm like, wow, that dad's really good at cutting logs. Like he can really cut those logs. And there's a couple scenes where he's cutting logs. And then later, his daughter calls him on that. He's like, look, Dad, you can't farm. You can't hunt. All you can do is cut logs. And I'm like, yes!
That's pretty funny. Do you know what's interesting about this movie here? There was a shitload of rewards. Awards and nominations. If you go to the Internet Movie Database, it has 43 wins and 67 nominations from all sorts of film fests and all this and all that. So many things, man.
Of course, it doesn't surprise me because, as we've already said, it was put together very, very well. When a horror movie is put together really, really well, it tends to cross genres.
Hey, that's what I was saying earlier. This would appeal to more people. This movie, it's not a super long movie. What the hell the runtime is it here, fellas? It's 1 hour and 32 minutes. Now, it is a very slow-paced movie, isn't it? I mean, I wouldn't consider it boring. Would you there, Grave Robber Jeff?
I definitely wouldn't consider it boring. Just because the whole feel of it keeps you on edge while you're watching, so it's hard to be bored, I thought.
No, I wasn't bored. Just in terms of the pace and the overall sense of dread and the building tension, like it's not an in-your-face roller coaster ride of a movie. It relies more on the character building and the atmosphere to bring you to a point where it's going to try to scare you.
Yeah, and going back to the actors, definitely one of the reasons why it wasn't boring, because they were just so good. Yeah, I feel like I have to just mention Harvey Scrimshaw again, because who played Caleb? In that one sequence in there where he gets all witched up for a second, it was one of the most cool performances I think I've seen in a while. I don't know how old he was and when he shot it. He's like, it always blows my mind how younger people can be so good at things so quickly.
Yeah, you got that right, eh?
But it was a very intense scene, I guess you can say.
So Harvey Scrimshaw was, in fact, 13 years old. He was born in 2001. What was the last movie we had that had a really good child actor in it? What was that? What were we talking about?
From Halloween 2018. I liked that young kid in it. He was hilarious.
Good memory, yeah. He was good.
Was that the one we were talking about or no?
I don't think so, but...
Oh.
Oh, yeah, of course. Come on, guys. Psycho Gorman.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Or even A Quiet Place or Dig Two Graves. We've watched a series of movies now with very strong young actors. I find that interesting. I find it encouraging.
And you know the funny thing is I work on film sets. No way in hell I'd let my kids on film sets.
All right, everybody, let's get into our rating segment.
Do you know what I just realized, fellas? Didn't we used to have a rating for hilarity or comedy way back in the day? Like if it was funny at all?
Why you're bringing that up for this movie, I have no idea.
I don't know. I was just sitting there going, I was listening to the Cannibal Holocaust podcast. And
why you're bringing it up for that movie, I have no idea.
Oh, God. Anyway, I digress. Hey, let's talk about the scary factor. We've already touched on this, but I'll go first. Wasn't that scary? There were a couple scary elements, right? Just because of the general atmosphere and stuff. And if you actually think about it, it would be pretty scary. I don't know, 3 out of 10?
I'll bump it up to 4 out of 10 just because of the peekaboo scene, you know? That was a weird one.
Oh, yeah, man. That peekaboo scene.
That was probably the scariest part.
You mean what came after the peekaboo scene or the actual peekaboo scene? Because if you thought that was 4 out of 10 scary, I got news for you, Jeff.
Different strokes for different folks, Jay. There was a kind of scary scene that had to do with the kids in that Thomason and a goat.
There's at least two
Oh, yeah.
that are very unsettling. Yeah, in a way that the taking of Deborah Logan was unsettling or Dark and the Wicked was unsettling.
See, something like the Dark and the Wicked was scary, though, I thought. This wasn't.
There was much more in the Dark and the Wicked that built the terror, yes.
Yeah.
I think this is more tense and uncomfortable in spots.
Yep. There you go. Actually, do you know what was another scary scene? When Caleb was kind of in the woods there and he comes upon that little hut. I thought that was kind of scary. Just seeing the hut with the smoke coming out of the chimney. And you're like, oh my God, what's going to come out of that hut?
You know what I always look for? Is that feeling of the adrenaline rush or the endorphins that go through you and you get like the goosebumps. That didn't happen in this movie.
No.
And it's happened several times since we started this podcast. So I just wasn't scared. I was disappointed because I wanted to be scared. I wanted to pick another movie that we'd be like, wow, this is great. And
I know, it's too bad. You kind of failed miserably on that one.
I think I dropped the ball a little bit.
That's all right. I don't blame you. If you see a tweet from goddamn Stephen King, the master of horror, and he goes, is he the master of horror?
At least one of them.
And if he's like, hey, man, this is a goddamn terrifying movie, then you know what I'm saying? I would have believed him. Okay, what's our next one? Disturbometer, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, there's definitely some disturbing scenes in there. Babies and dogs and crows and just general witchy hijinks. Like, I don't know.
There's, love those general some, witchy hijinks.
There are definitely some scenes that make you go, ugh.
Things that make you go, ugh. Oh, God, we got to remake that song.
I think you just did.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but then overall, though, I've definitely seen more disturbing, like our last couple episodes. So it's probably a moderate, I would say.
Moderately disturbing. Slicing Dice and Dave.
I'd agree. Moderately disturbing. All right, what are we on to here? The hoots and such category. It's funny because as you're watching it on Netflix there, in the top left corner, it says, oh, frightening, this, this, and that. And it says, does it say something like graphic nudity?
Graphic nudity.
It says that, doesn't it? And in my opinion, there is not graphic nudity.
I gotta say, it's really the most ungraphic nudity that you could possibly think of. I mean, there's a lot of nudity, but there's not a lot of explicit nudity. It's done in a way to unnerve you rather than anything else.
Because there was one scene that a body part doesn't necessarily get the best care, if that's what they were getting at, like more violence than graphic nudity type of thing.
Well, right. Explain to us, Netflix, what you meant, because we didn't get it. There's some far-off hoots and butts. Anywho, so I'd say mild.
If the Netflix warning puts you off, I wouldn't worry too much about it. The nudity is not an issue in this movie.
There you go. Hey, the next category is gore. And this is pretty important. There's a little bit of gross stuff in there, but it's not super gory, but mildly moderate gory, like a 4 out of 10 or something.
I was going to hit 4 out of 10.
Oh, well, there you go. So obviously it is a 4 out of 10.
And just for, because we're talking to horror audiences here, but just as a general guide, the IMDb says, but violence and gore was reported as severe, and frightening intense scenes was also severe, which is the highest rating on IMDb.
What? Well, I'm glad we're doing this then, because in my humble opinion, it was very, like, moderate on both of those aspects. I think a lot of regular people had been watching that. Not these disgusting, desensitized horror fiends like us. You know what I'm saying?
So that's a good point, and that's probably something that should factor into our ratings, is that from the perspective of a jaded horror fan, it's going to be a very different experience than it is for someone who's lured in by the production quality and the word of mouth that this is a movie that you should see.
There you go. That's why I'm just flabbergasted that Stephen King was shitting his pants over this film, because look at the stuff he writes. The Shining? It? All I'm trying to say is he's a horror fiend as well, but he said he was scared. Maybe they just paid him a lot of money to say that.
All right, so I think we're into our final ratings, gentlemen.
Hey, okay, well, I guess I'll go first here, fellas. The Witch here from 2015, coming at 1 hour and 32 minutes, rated R. I didn't necessarily love it, and I didn't necessarily not care for it. I gave it a 6 out of 10.
You don't say, hey? Ooh. Our go-to 6 out of 10.
6 out of 10.
Grave Robin Jeff, what do you give The Witch for your final rating?
Well, I'm not usually a fan of the religious tales, and this one is a period piece with the language was quite tough to follow sometimes. But I was more of a fan of the acting and the ambiance. So I'm going to take this to a 6.8 out of 10.
I love how accurate you are on these all of a sudden.
Well, it makes a difference, I guess, and it makes sense.
Well, I think I have to go back to my old ratings and see what I rated everything and start, because I can't rate everything under a 7.
All right. Well, thanks, Grave Robber Jeff. I think the point here is that it is a very good movie. It's just I was disappointed that I wasn't scared more. I appreciated the art that goes into it. I appreciated all the pieces. The acting's great. The score is great. The visuals are great. The story's even great. It's just, it wasn't super scary. From a hardcore horror fan perspective, you just have to know that going in, that you got to set your expectations accordingly. I give it a 7 out of 10. And keep in mind, this is Robert Eggers' first feature film, and he also wrote it. And you can tell it's a labor of love. He put a lot into this. Should be seen. You should approach it, though, knowing what it is so that you're not disappointed.
Well, that's very good of you there, Jason. I understand your rating completely. Now, hey, The Witch, let's just talk about this for a second on the old Rotten Tomatoes. It's funny because I thought it was super well received. The critics rated it 90% positive on the old tomato meter. Well, the audience score of 25,000 plus ratings, get this, 59%. So that's below even what I gave it of a 6. Basically, it's what I gave it. But isn't that interesting? Because I read all the I read a bunch of reviews either before or after. I can't remember. I'd say 90% of them were very favorable. I am a little surprised. Okay, hey, fellas. Thanks for spending the time with me this weekend talking about The Witch from Netflix.
All right, listeners. We're interested to hear what you thought of The Witch. Did it scare the pants off you like it scared Stephen King? Let us know. WatchOutHorror@gmail.com. You can get in touch with us. You can also follow us on Twitter @WatchOutHorror or on Instagram @WatchOutHorrorCast. Slice and Dice and Dave, where can we follow you?
I'm on Twitter. I think it's @SliceAndDiceAndDave, if I'm not mistaken.
And as always, listeners, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate each and every one of you for listening to us. Otherwise, we'd just be talking to ourselves. We can't wait for the next episode where Slice and Dice and Dave picks our feature review.
Buckle up.
So until next time, and there will be a next time.
I hope so.
Be safe, treat each other well, and go watch some horror movies.
Jeff, you say something. You're funny.
Well, I'm not trying to be funny here.
Thank you for listening to Watch Out. The opinions you've just heard have been made by three guys from Canada. Please keep this in mind and enjoy responsibly.
And the category I picked was, what was it? You'll have to tell me.
Was the unraveling
mind or something?
The unraveling mind.
Oh, that's right.
It's just because listen to how we talk here. It's so
unpuritanical.
Yeah, so unperiodically atanical or whatever you just said. You see what I'm saying? We're morons. Okay, what the hell are we chatting about here? Hoots and shit. Or hoots and such. The amount of times people say, what the hell were you talking about there, Grave Robin Dave? And then I go, what are you talking about? My name's not Grave Robin Dave. I'm fucking Slice and Dice and Dave. And then I do this thing with my hands and I go, fsh, 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 like as if I have two Freddy Krueger mitts on. God, I got my own shtick.
Well, it's right. Like a trivia, Dave. We're not.
No,
I'm
it's not. It's not at
just,
all.
I can't just give the grapes up to you on a silver platter.
No. Hey, you know what it is? It's called being joyful with another man. Hold on. No, that's not. Is that what it's called at all?
I think it's called envy.
Whoa, pal. No, hey, I'm talking about lust here. Why do I always get back to joy with other men? Little jerks singing that thing about the goat. What were they singing? Black Tom, or Black, what's his name? The hell is his goddamn name? I just watched the movie.
Black Casper.
Black Tom?
Black Philip.
Ah, yes.